Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's that lump that's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
Alright, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascists.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good evening, good evening, good evening, good evening, and welcome.
Yes, welcome to the podcast.
I am.
Bias Baseball Ooh. Podcast.
I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Happy, happy end of the year. Happy holiday. Happy Festivus. Yeah. Whatever you got going on. We'll be doing feats of strength later. I'm going to be airing out my grievances very, very soon. It's been a little while. We are back. We've been traveling a bit. You know, we've been.
Yeah, the holidays are a crazy busy time. It's been a while, but we're here for you. One last episode before the new calendar year. Not quite the new baseball year, but it's right around the corner.
Wow.
We've got like a month and a half before pitchers and catchers report. That is some good news.
I'm glad you're already thinking about that.
I started thinking about that October 31st,
Me, a little bit earlier than that. But yeah, it's been a weird year. Hey, look, that's... Well, it's going to be an even weirder next year. We'll see. We'll see once the... whole Astro Gate thing comes to a head.
Astros.
We don't need to talk about that. Look, there's
the more that I thought about that, the more angrier I got. You know why? Because I can't give you a hard time about the Dodgers losing that because
right.
They got cheated. They didn't lose fair and square. They still lost, but it wasn't. There was obviously something hinky going on that World Series.
And, oh yeah.
It's very disappointing just on the fact that it wasn't fair. So I can't give you as hard to thank God there was 2018 and the Red Sox won. It'd be really bad then.
Yeah. And there was always something that hurt about 17 and 18 didn't really hurt as bad. I mean, it was very disappointing, but it didn't feel as bad. 17 and now we know.
Yeah.
The hurt is justified. We can get into that a little bit later. I want to talk about something Alex Wood was saying about the 2017 World Series. But man, all right, it's been a little while. You good? You rested? You feeling all right?
Yeah, I think so. I am. I'm satisfied with the way that the year turned out, and the end of the year was very nice. The holiday season has been great, and the hot stove so far has been a lot of fun. There's been a lot of things happening in baseball, which is different than this time last year.
I think you could say
that
again.
It's a good thing.
You know, it's really nice, and it's kind of refreshing to see that guys are getting signed before the turn of the calendar year.
Before spring training starts.
I know. So crazy figures that I was looking at is that this offseason, as of now, thus far, there have been $1 billion, $1.095 billion spent on pitchers.
Now,
so
mostly
far.
Scott Boras clients, right?
Well, maybe. But you know what the number was this time last year?
It was probably significantly lower than that.
$348 million. Yeah.
So yeah. that was all just taken care of just by one pitcher alone. Then,
well,
right?
No, I mean a billion. No. So yeah, Cole, Strasburg, Rue, Bumgarner, Wheeler, Keuchel.
Last year's figure was matched by just one player. That was my point.
Oh, I see. Yeah, 100%. I'm not paying attention. Yeah, it's pretty insane. The total for 2018 offseason was only like $400 million or something like that, which is nuts. And so, but that's a good sign, you know. So is this a, is this smart? Or have, or is it like the teams have short memories and for a couple of years they're like, no more long-term contracts, no more high-figure contracts. And now this year they're like, all right, what the hell? Or is it that starting pitching is at more of a premium than maybe they thought the last couple of years? Because the last couple of years the whole adage has been, in the sort of frame of thinking has been bullpen, bullpen, bullpen. But what you saw last year and the year before is that, no, it's starting pitching.
Especially,
when you look at Strasburg.
Especially
at
in the
Corbin.
Postseason.
Yeah. Oh,
especially
100%.
In the postseason.
Yeah.
Having strong starters is super important. I think it's a combination of both. I think teams do have short memories as soon as contracts start to come off the books and say, oh, we have a bunch of money, extra money we can spend, especially in a sport like baseball that is uncapped in terms of salary.
There are deterrents.
There are deterrents, but there's no like rule that says you can't just like spend the wad on a single player.
Free babe capitalism, baby.
Yeah. But
show him the curve.
I think, but yeah, I think elite starting pitching is definitely at a premium. Always really has been. Always probably will be.
Right, but you know, the last couple of years, it seemed like maybe it's going not out, but it's less fashionable. But no, you're right. It'll always be at a premium. Yeah. You can only have so many openers. You can only have, you know, so many guys that can only go a few innings. You still need those workhorses, and right. That's what we're seeing. And I think that's a good thing.
It is. I think, and I think in terms of the short term memory, I think yeah, the history of these contracts that span a better part of a decade have a history of really not working out in teams' favors.
Now I thought. Of course, traditionally, a long-term contract to a pitcher nearing 30 would only go to an American League team because of the DH and stuff like that. But, you know, who knows? Maybe in a couple years we'll have a universal DH. I hope that's not the case because that is awful and shameful.
Shame.
But it might happen.
Shame.
It might happen. And
it could.
And if it does, then I guess none of this will matter. But so it's not surprising to see Cole signing a 9-year, $324 million deal with the American League.
And the only thing really surprising about that is like the sheer number. The amount is just astronomical. $36 million a year.
Yeah.
What you told me it was like $45,000 a pitch.
Something like that, if you break it down. Right.
If he stays healthy and assuming 100 pitches a game, it's
over $1 million a start.
It's good to be the ball player, I guess. I would not mind a fraction of that. It'd be really nice.
But so is that going to be, I mean, is he ready for that New York, I mean, the media scrutiny? As soon as he has one blow-up game, Cole, that is, is he just going to get ripped apart? Like, you're getting paid $3,000 a pitch and you can't even get out of the fifth inning? Like,
of course he's going to get ripped apart. It's New York.
Yeah.
But no one can say whether he's ready or not until that moment comes. And then we'll see if he's, you know, bold and faces the music and it doesn't bother him, or he becomes some sort of shrieking violet or something.
Well, he's always wanted to play in the Bronx, supposedly. That's
supposedly grew up a Yankees fan.
He said, I've always been a Yankee. Yeah, so he said something weird like that. Like, really? You've always been a Yankee? Weren't you an Astro for a while?
Pirate.
The stink of the Astros. Like, yeah. I mean, I don't blame him.
I mean, I believe that he hasn't always been a Yankee. I believe that he's always been a Yankee fan. But
that's,
you know, his
strange
grandfather,
yeah.
But I mean, he was, you know, I mean, it happens. People across the country are Yankees fans for no apparent reason other than, well, the Yankees get the most coverage. That's why here at West Coast Bias tried to talk about other teams other than the Yankees. But sometimes it's hard when they steal headlines like signing a big name pitcher to a 9-year, 320-some-odd-million-dollar contract.
Shame.
9-year, $324 million deal that includes an opt-in that would bring the total to $360 million.
Right. There's also an opt-out attached to this, too. After the 2024 season, Gerrit Cole can opt out, and then the Yankees can counter with that one-year $36 million extension. Yeah. But
now, you know, it seems crazy. I mean, if this was the Royals doing that, that would seem weird because they're not really set up to win. But this kind of is the best thing the Yankees can do to get them closer to winning a World Series. I think within the next 2 years, they can at least win the pennant.
Right. And that's what the Yankees ultimately really were missing this past season, except for, you know, trying to counter the Astros cheating. And the ALCS, you know, what they were missing to actually get to the World Series this past season, they were missing that one key starter
that
could go deep into games and big games and dominate.
They did not have that, and it could be argued that had they had Cole this last season, they could have won the pennant, at least if the Astros weren't cheating. Now, they also, with Cole, get that insider knowledge of everything about the Astros organization, because of course Cole must have known everything that was going on. Do they sit him down and be like, all right, now we got to talk about the Astros and like tell us everything? Can they do that? Will they do that? Or would they just try to leave it alone?
I don't know that it'll happen so formally, but I'm sure they'll start to talk once October comes around.
Yeah.
Well, especially as October nears, but Astros aren't going to be nearly as good this coming season as they were.
We don't know. I mean, look, if Manfred and baseball handles the Astros like the Patriots got handled, I mean, we talked about this before, but the Patriots just got some draft picks taken away. They still won like four more Super Bowls after that. I mean, it didn't deter them at all. So if that's all they do with the Astros,
and
they have a very young
too,
squad,
Patriots, but...
yeah, what do they care? So they might still be just as good next year. You know, now, if the cheating was that prevalent and had that much to do with their success, and they're no longer able to cheat, then yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe they'll become
a little bit more average and open
Angels,
the door for the A's.
Angels are looking good now. I mean, they always sort of look good on paper, at least in terms of bats.
They can stay healthy and they can pick up some arms. Then.
How much better is Trout going to be now that he's got Rendon? hitting in front of him. It's just going to be insane.
A lot more protection in the lineup.
150 RBIs? I mean, what? Trout is going to be unreal now with that extra protection. Anthony Rendon, 7-year, $245 million.
Good for him.
He's from Texas, right? Yeah, Rendon. So. But he gets to play in Texas a lot more. That's probably what he was thinking, too. He's like, I don't want to be an Astro. I don't really want to be a Ranger. And so I guess I'll play in the American League West with maybe the best right-handed hitter of his generation.
It'll be Pujols 19 games at least in Texas. So.
Yeah, definitely. And he was feasting in Texas when he played there, at least in the postseason. So, yeah, the Angels, again, I mean, is Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani finished his rehab assignment after his Tommy John, but they're still going to treat him very, very delicately, I think. Sure. I don't think they're just going to let him go out there.
Give him the Strasburg treatment for a year?
Maybe even more delicate than that. I mean, I think...
Well, at least...
What's the max innings he pitches? 100 this coming season? 120, maybe? What do you think? I mean, I guess it depends on...
It depends on how, you know, how effective he is, how he does, and how often they use him as DH. I mean, they still got Pujols there for... This is last year of that monster deal that he signed, right?
Is it the last year? I thought he had two more years. Maybe you're right. Maybe. Yeah,
it's close to the end, but yeah, it's been a while, and I think he's close to the end of that contract.
And Pujols can't play every day, and so I mean, Ohtani's got a much more electric bat than Pujols does.
He
nowadays.
Certainly has got more electric legs than Pujols does.
Yeah,
although,
he's good for 20 steals for sure.
I guess. Pujols, I read a stat that he has got the longest streak of successful steal attempts in his career.
Oh, yeah.
So the last 12 times that he's tried to steal, he's been successful at it.
Does
of course,
that
that's come over. Yeah, it comes over a few years, but He doesn't try to steal that off him, but when he does, he's successful.
That makes sense because nobody's looking at him. Nobody thinks he's going
to
steal.
He's not a threat to
he's
run.
He's the slowest to first base. We've talked about this before, but he can also turn it on when he needs to, which is kind of strange. Maybe he just deals with the pain, his plantar fasciitis or whatever, gets the job done. And speaking of the West, Kluber. Traded to the Rangers. Yeah. I feel like this went kind of under the radar.
Now, it did. It did go a little bit under the radar because, well, I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on at the time too. But yeah, it was surprising news.
Yeah, and I guess it was a trade, but still, I mean, Kluber obviously had a shortened season last year. He had that comebacker come back to him, and I don't know. I think during his rehab, he was still kind of hurt. But the Indians in return get Delano DeShields Jr. and pitcher Emmanuel Clase. Class? I don't know. I mean, Kluber is dominant. There's no doubt about that. He is 33, though. So is this the Indians trying to offload? Are we going to be seeing a possible Lindor trade as well?
That's the rumor. Certainly the Dodgers are right there in the thick of it, but...
The Indians would probably want Gavin Lux, the Dodgers' top prospect. Maybe we can even sweeten the deal with like a Jock Peterson or something like that. To get Lindor, I'd be more willing to get rid of players than I would have in any sort of recent year, at least in past memory, give up to get kind of thing. Usually with the Dodgers especially, we're still projected to win about 100 games. We're still projected to win the West. With the team we have now, people are complaining that the Dodgers aren't doing enough. But look, I mean, Dodgers went out and got Blake Treinen.
Yeah.
If Blake Treinen is as good as he was last year, or even, you know, slightly worse, he's still going to be a perfect eighth inning guy. Maybe even taking the role from Kenley. I mean, Treinen was lights out.
Well, did they have any sort of setback with the loss of Ryu, not being able to re-sign him?
Possibly, but I mean, the Dodgers are still pretty thick. I mean, they got Dustin May, can still get in there. Of course, Buehler, Kershaw. Not too worried about their starters. Really, their issue in this last year was sort of eighth inning guy. And if you can get Treinen in there, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. It seems like all the big starting pitchers have been taken already. But again, I mean, unless the Padres really step it up, unless the Giants really step it up, I don't know if that's going to happen this year.
Probably not going to be likely this year. Stranger things have happened, but...
The Dodgers were trying. I mean, they were second place to get Gerrit Cole. They had reportedly offered an 8-year, $300 million deal, which would have been the largest free agent contract ever granted to a pitcher. Now, of course, the Yankees blew that out of the water with an extra year, an extra $24 million, and the fact that he wanted to play with the Yankees went to help a lot, but
instead of being closer to home, and despite him saying that he wanted to play west of the Rockies.
It's really weird, right? That's strange. Now, at risk of sounding like a typical off-season fan who is only interested in shiny new toys that sometimes come in the form of free agent signings, what team do you think is doing the best to help their chances of reaching the playoffs next season?
Man, there's been quite a few things, but I know a lot has happened in the south side of Chicago.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I mean, I don't want to call winners and losers, but seems like
they've
right
been doing
now,
a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, they just signed Encarnacion to a 1-year deal with a $1 million signing bonus for 2020 and a $12 million option for 2021. Now, of course, Encarnacion is on the wrong side of 30, but I mean, you know, the guy is, he has, what, 8 straight seasons of over 30 home runs? And obviously his defense isn't really a plus, and they could probably use some help in their outfield. And they just re-extended Jose Abreu at first base. So Encarnacion is pretty much a strictly DH kind of guy. But
I think so.
Man, I mean, with him in there now, I mean, it looks like if you're looking at the potential lineup for the White Sox for 2020, it appears that virtually every player has the potential to hit 20 home runs. They're like the opposite of the Giants, basically. One player can hit 20. Actually, the Giants got 3, right? So anyway, you got Yoan Moncada, you got Tim Anderson, Jose Abreu, Encarnacion, Grandal, who they picked up, Nomar Mazara, who they traded for, Eloy Jimenez, Luis Robert, and then Nick Madrigal, who's their prospect, who's probably going to be playing this year. He's supposed to be electric. Southside's looking pretty good.
They are. If they can, they're in a relatively soft division. I mean, there's only been the Twins.
The Twins won 101 games,
and
they're no slouches.
And the Indians have been fairly decent the last few years as well. But other than that, it's not much going on.
I mean, if Carrasco is back 100%, that's a big if. And if he's not, then I guess Clevinger is their number one. I mean, without Kluber, right. Indians aren't looking too good. I mean, they weren't looking that great this last season. Now, of course, again, Kluber only had like 3 months of the season. But, yeah, I don't know.
And Carrasco went out pretty early as well.
Yeah, it's nice to see the White Sox. You know, they didn't have a big payroll last year. So, yeah, they got some money to spend, and it's nice to see them spend it.
Yeah. And start to make a run. They have an window of opportunity, and then it looks like they're going to go for it. And that is, that's good.
Now, if only they had Machado, right? But no, they don't need it. They got Moncada and Tim Anderson. I mean, Tim Anderson is very streaky, but you know, he's the kind of guy that should be healthy for a long time and should be able to play shortstop for a long time. But yeah, I mean, them, and speaking of another American League team, go all the way up north to the frozen north. We got the Blue Jays.
Jays, yeah. That big...
taking a bit, little bit of a gamble. What do you think about this four-year, $80 million deal for Hyunjin Ryu?
Well, I mean, it's good for him. He certainly earned it this past year with the start of the season that he had.
Oh, God. I mean, second place Cy Young, I mean,
yeah,
100%.
I think Ryu can keep that consistent for the next even just 2 years, I think that and I think that the Blue Jays made a good signing. I think they picked up a good pitcher.
Oh yeah. And 2.32 ERA
they're also,
is pretty damn good.
They're also going to pick up, I think, a little bit extra money from TV in Korea, because now the Blue Jays games are going to be carried in Korea.
Oh, there's going to be a lot of Blue Jays hats sold in Seoul. In Seoul? Is that okay? Yeah.
Yeah, Blue Jays Gangnam style or something. Like that.
Shame.
Blue Jays 2020 rotation instantly gets a boost. And, you know, the unit posted a combined 5.25 ERA, ninth worst in the majors in 2019. But on paper... You know, looking forward, you got Hyunjin Ryu, you got Tanner Roark, you got Chase Anderson, Shoemaker, and then they also just got the Yamaguchi guy, right?
Yamaguchi guy.
Yeah, Yamaguchi. So you got Japan, Korea, truly international, Canadian, yeah. Some of them speak French. I mean, come on, very metropolitan. I don't know.
Fancy. How fancy.
Indeed.
All about the drops today. I think those two teams, who aren't really making a lot of noise in the past, are looking pretty good. Now, American League East is going to be a lot tougher now, of course, with the Yankees.
Yeah.
Well, but again,
Yankees, Red Sox, the Rays have been good the last several years. So, I mean, that's a tough division. So
we'll see how strong Cole is without a beard. He's got nowhere to hide now.
So. Yeah.
All freshly shaven.
He said his press conference, he said he had a razor burn for the first time in 10 years.
I was going to say, has his wife ever seen his face?
Who knows?
She might not.
Maybe not.
of course, Strasburg signed. This is all like ancient history. But, so you were talking, or it wasn't just you, but some news coming in a local fashion at AT Oracle Park.
Right.
I'm just going to call it AT&T for another year, if that's
probably,
okay.
I have no problem with that. It was AT&T for the longest. I still call it Pac Bell on occasion. So.
I know that. You don't think I know that?
The dimensions are changing, but not just that.
They have changed, actually.
They have changed.
Yeah.
It's a done deal.
It is a done deal. They've moved the... bullpens off of
gone
the
out of there
the sidelines to
the parking lot.
Well, center field bleachers. They took out rows of the center field bleachers.
I was wondering about that.
They put them. Both bullpens will now be against the center field fence, side by side lengthwise. There'll be a public viewing area in between.
What do you mean, like on the ground floor?
Seattle? On the ground floor. Really? Well, they have
some, or like from above peering down.
Well, from above peering down, if you're in the first couple rows of the bleachers, you'd be able to see down in there. But also, they have a concession and a little organic garden area down there.
Oh, so it's going to be right there.
It's going to be right in front of that. Okay. The concessions will still thing, and from what I understand, there will be a little place for where fans can go and stand and watch. I think in either, but the Giants bullpen will be able to be viewed by fans at ground level down there, similar to the right field wall.
Okay, yeah. So field level, ground level.
Ground level, be able to peer into one or both of the bullpens, like right next.
So they're
right
they're taking it, out seats, and they're bringing in the center field fences.
And they're bringing in the center field fences by fairly significant margin, several feet.
I thought what is it, like 8 feet or?
Well, it's 8 to 9 feet.
That's a lot.
So Triples Alley.
It's two whole steps.
So Triples Alley out there.
That's staying the same, right?
And right center, no, that's coming in.
What?
That's going from 421 feet to now 415 feet.
I thought it was just straightaway center that they were bringing.
Well, that whole center field wall. You can't move the brick wall.
Right, I was going to say, like, that's going
to
stay.
So
there.
The only dimensions that are really able to move are the center field wall and the left field wall, because those are the chain link. So what they're not moving. So the corners are going to stay the same, the power alleys are going to stay the same, and then Triples Alley on the right field side is going to come in to 415 feet, still deep enough to have triples, and but there's been a lot of fly balls that would be home runs anywhere else that have been caught right there on the track. Those will now probably be home runs, or a lot closer to home runs. The dead center field coming in from 399 to 391.
Wow.
And the little corner in left center field, where the center field wall meets left field wall, coming in from 401 to 399. So less dramatic, but still in.
Yeah. I mean, you think about all those warning track balls, those are now home runs. I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And plus, the city gets warmer and warmer every year, so you can imagine a huge burst in power. I guess we'll see at the end of 2020.
Well, we'll see how much of a difference it makes, but it'll probably make a little bit of a difference.
Now, they're taking out the bullpens from the field, and they're taking out seats in center field. Does that mean they're going to add seats to left and right, like where the bullpens used to be?
I don't know. I think they've added
In those walls?
I think they've added more a standing room only area. But I don't know if they've added any more actual seats.
Because there's still going to be a good amount of foul territory there. And I guess that little bump will be gone.
That little bump will be gone. And I think the dimensions from foul territory are going to change that much. I don't know if they're adding any seats down there.
It won't be quite like the Oakland A's stadium with all that foul territory. But it seems there's going to be a good amount, especially if it's flat. It's going to be a lot easier to...
It'd be a lot less dangerous. I don't know about how much easier, especially on the first base line.
You know,
the first base line. There's still the right fielder is still going to play more towards center.
Sure,
and so that's still going to be a long run to catch anything down the line.
I'm thinking more like by first base bag, like right where the bullpen's
I don't think that dimension's going to change all that much. It wasn't a whole lot of foul territory anyway. So they designed it because Candlestick was like Oakland. Had tons of foul territory.
Now, does this worry you at all? Are you selling out, maybe getting a few extra home runs, and then you have a lot of young pitchers? Are they going to get shelled more often? Is this a concern for Giants fans?
I mean, I don't know. I'm personally a little disappointed. I liked having the bullpen on the field. I think it was more old-timey baseball. I think those little quirks. I mean, hey, you gotta watch your step.
Yeah.
Not, and the number of foul balls that went into the vicinity of the bullpen mound, I think, wasn't significant, but it was one of the factors that Bryce Harper cited when he decided not to take the Giants' offer. He said he specifically mentioned the foul territory and the you know, dangers of running down foul balls over there.
That's a clown question, bro.
So I mean, I don't know if
Bryce,
it's really a concern
anyway,
or not.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that guy doesn't. But well,
it'll be interesting to see what happens.
So now is Wrigley Field the last stadium that to have bullpen on the field?
No.
Who else?
But Wrigley Field moved their bullpens underneath the bleachers a couple seasons ago.
Jeez, I'm out of the loop.
Yeah, the bullpens for Wrigley Field are now behind the ivy.
So is there any field?
Nothing comes to mind. I don't believe.
Oh, that's even more shameful then that the Giants were the only ones and they got rid of them. Interesting.
Maybe in Oakland they're still out there. Because there's a lot of more room, but I can't, nothing like comes to mind.
Yeah, I guess you're
right. For sure. Most of the new stadiums, they've put the bullpens out beyond the outfield wall.
It'll be cool to see how close you can get now to the new Giants bullpen out in center field.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing seems as close as Seattle. I mean, that Petco or what the hell, T-Mobile, whatever it's called now. That's like, it's almost like dangerous how close you can get to these guys warming up. I almost feel bad for them because there's so many people standing around them at like level, you know, at field level. It's
right.
I mean, it's amazing, you know, it's super cool, but like, it'd be hard to concentrate there, I would imagine. Maybe. Especially a relief pitcher is always so in their heads. Now, speaking of new stadiums, well, not new stadiums, but there is a new stadium that we're going to be seeing.
There will be a new stadium this year, yes.
Or will there? Because apparently you're saying there was a two-alarm fire going on in Texas?
There was at the Rangers.
What's
brand new stadium
called?
And I'm not sure of the actual name. Right now it's just the new ballpark in Arlington.
Really?
I don't know if they're going to have a corporate sponsor or not. I haven't found that particular
detail. I'm
sure
they're going to. Globe Life Field? Is that what it is?
That might be it.
Globe Life Field. Yes, sir. Arlington, Texas.
There was a two-alarm fire. Fortunately, it was contained in the upper levels of the stadium, and there were no injuries reported. So,
hot dog vendor got a little too excited, or
the last report that I saw on it was that the cause was still under investigation.
Interesting. Right. This park looks pretty cool. I'm looking at some. These aren't actual pictures, I guess, but it's got a retractable roof. Not unlike Scottsdale, Arizona. What's that park called?
Chase Field.
Bank Chase.
It used to be Bank One Ballpark. Yeah.
See, as soon as winter comes, my brain just turns to mush. But the Rangers, they might be making a squeak over there in the West. We'll see. They got Klubs, and they have some fires going on. Cost $1.1 billion to build this stadium, supposedly. Wow. So.
Yeah.
See how it goes. Hopefully, there's no more fires.
Right.
Mike fires.
There was a time where stadium fires were fairly common. but
back when smoking was legal in the stadium.
Well, yeah, and the stadiums were made of primarily of wood. I mean, the last stadium that the Giants played in New York, the Polo Grounds, was actually Polo Grounds number 4 because 3 previous stadiums had existed there and burned down.
Hey now.
So there's a long history in baseball of stadiums like burning down. So fortunately, this fire didn't get too out of control. But
yeah, because they're not smoking cigarettes; like they're smoking big old cigars back then. they're not messing around.
I don't think they mess around much with in Texas either. But you know,
now something that happened a couple weeks ago now is that Ian Kinsler finally hung him up.
Yeah.
You know, he said, my pride wouldn't let me go halfway at something I've been doing at 100% for my whole baseball life after 14 major league seasons.
Wow.
A herniated cervical disc has removed him from playing baseball for good. Cervical disc.
That's got to be painful.
Is he a woman? What is it? What the hell is your cervix? Oh, that's your neck? Oh, okay. All right. I don't know. I'm not an anatomist, apparently. You know, he was a four-time All-Star, won two Gold Gloves. He would have been a great leadoff guy for any team for a good 10-year stretch that he was playing healthy. He's Hall of Fame, probably not, but solid guy. Now the saddest thing, I don't know if it's sad or if it's, I mean, it's actually pretty honorable, and I think it's good for him that he's not going to try to come back. He's finishing his career with 1,999 hits.
Ooh,
I mean, right?
It's gotta hurt. Got to have just one more hit, make it an even 2,000. But.
I mean, a lot of credit to him. He's not going to try to come back as like a gimp, basically, and try to just get that one hit for himself. He's thinking about the team and his integrity. That's amazing. That being said, I mean, come on, 10 years from now, 15, 20 years from now, you're going to be looking at that. Everybody's going to ask you, oh, so you only got your one hit shy 2,000? It's not like that would have got him anything. Other than just being able to
say that he was in the 2000 hit club.
I mean, jeez, that's brutal, man.
How do you sleep at night?
It's terrible. He's not going to be able to sleep. I mean, that's just it hurts. It hurts me thinking about how he's going to have to deal with that the rest of his life. Now, you know, I'm sure he'll wear that with a badge of honor, but man, that's tough.
Yeah.
You would almost feel like maybe they give him like a one day. But, you know, I guess one game isn't going to do it, you know, if you don't get a hit in that, like a one-day contract after his neck.
Right.
Maybe he's feeling a little bit better, up. And
maybe swing the bat a few times out there. And
for what team? Texas, then, maybe? The Rangers? Yeah. Definitely not the Angels. I guess it would be the Rangers, right? That's where he spent most of his career. I mean, probably. Of course, Detroit spent some good years there. But, you know, yeah, you know, missed the guy. I didn't serve that guy, but I saw him come into my day job. Last year, yeah, came in. Looks like a normal dude. You wouldn't even know he's a professional ball player. Yeah. Nice guy. But 199. 269 lifetime batting average, 257 home runs, 243 stolen bases. A solid leadoff guy. Solid leadoff guy. But yeah, man, that's tough.
Yeah.
That's pretty brutal.
Well, it's always a sad thing when a player has to hang him up, not necessarily by choice, but because of an injury, just physically can't do it anymore. That's the nature of playing, and really any athletic venture. An injury is a risk that all these guys take, and you know they're paid millions upon millions of dollars to do it. So
yeah, it's nice to see a guy that doesn't have a giant ego. He doesn't have a big head about it. It's kind of refreshing to see a guy that's not too selfish. Now, speaking of big heads. The French Olympic team. You like that segue?
I figured that's where you're going. If you didn't say it, I probably would have. But
hey, that really sucked.
I do what I can. All right. The French baseball team has a new Olympic coach.
Yeah,
the
national baseball team for France has a new manager, and his name is Bruce Bochy.
The Boch.
The reason why he got the job.
So he's not retired.
Well, he's retired from Major League Baseball. But,
now, okay. Is he a traitor? Did he get deported? Is he a Frenchman that I didn't? Is he a secret Frenchman? I didn't know about this whole time.
He was born in France.
Really?
He was the first French-born person to win a World Series.
Interesting.
What about Jeff
Francoeur? What about Frank? Didn't he win over?
I think that's a French name, but I don't know where he was necessarily born.
Now, was he born in France, like on like an Air Force base, or was he actually French?
I think his father was in the army, and he was stationed in France when Bruce was born. I don't know
does
if it was
count?
On the base or not.
Counts.
I mean, he was born there, but I mean, there was some sort of connection to France at the very least.
So I would imagine he speaks fluent French, right? I mean, how do you manage a baseball team that only speaks French if you can't speak it yourself?
Je ne sais quoi.
oui, oui. Croissant.
I don't know if Bruce Bocce speaks French. I imagine if he does, I can just imagine his slow drawl with a French accent.
That's true. Something. He speaks slow enough. Just, anyway. Now, this is sort of not unlike the Mike Piazza managing the Italian team, right?
Right. Exactly. If one of your parents were born in a particular country, you're eligible to play for that country.
Right.
I don't know exactly how it works, but that's the connection to France, that he was actually born there, not in the United States.
Yeah, hey, look, Bochy's a great manager. Piazza was one of the greatest hitting catchers of all time.
Yeah.
Maybe the best. I mean, Johnny Bench has a lot to say about that, but it'd probably be pretty good. And Italian, maybe he knows some Italian. I don't know. You know, he's got Lasorda in the family, right?
Right. Doesn't, yeah.
Yeah.
There's something. A cousin or something.
Some distant relative. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Now, I'm excited about the World Baseball Classic because that must be coming up in 2021, right?
Right. So. But this is an Olympic year, and baseball is back as a Olympic sport.
Man. That's interesting. Is it going to be pros or is it just going to be all amateurs? I guess it's going to be pros, right?
I think there'll be some pros, but I don't think that too many major league teams will allow for...
in the middle of the summer.
In the
middle
of the summer.
That's true. Yeah, that is kind of weird. How does that work?
I think that the actual major leaguers might be limited on the U.S. and Canadian baseball teams, but maybe around the thing we'll see a lot of professional baseball players out of Japan and Korea and Cuba.
Now the Olympics are cool, but I mean, come on, World Baseball Classic. That's what the real crown in my mind. And we are current champions. So I am really excited for that. U.S. It only took us four tournaments to finally win one.
Get the act together to actually win.
But. It's either a Caribbean team or Japan. It seems like they just dominate. I think Japan has two, right? Two titles and, of course,
they've
Dominican.
Won the first two,
So it's great for the U.S. And that team really came together. I mean, that was just like a true team effort. I guess it was two years ago. It used to be every 3 years. Now, I don't know. Yeah, so I guess it was only 2 years ago. Yeah. I just remember, like, Adam Jones, that robbing that Machado home run. It's just – or Nelson Cruz home run, right? Amazing. Just awesome. Awesome. Excited for that. But we'll see if – will Bochy be the French coach for the Classic also? Is that what he's intimating?
I don't see why not, but I did not see any detail of that. He was just named manager for the French national team. I did not see for – how long, if there's a particular tenure that he was going to be there for. But it'll definitely be at least for the Olympics. And, you know, it's going to be only about 7 months after that to the next WBC. So,
yeah, I'm excited. That's going to be pretty interesting. Now, I sort of alluded to Alex Wood, and we're talking about the Astros in 2017 a little bit. And I saw... you know, a nice little article in The Athletic recently. And Alex Wood kind of opened up a little bit about pitching in Minute Maid Park in 2017. He was quoted as saying, I was nervous as shit. I can admit that 3 years later. He was also quoted as saying, we had heard whispers of some of the shady stuff they'd been doing. Obviously, we had no idea it was to the extent that came out. In terms of setting up cameras in the tunnel and banging on trash cans, that's pretty wild. You know, that start, so we're talking about, was that game three, World Series, right? He came to that start with a specific plan. He was wary of the Astros deciphering his plans or his signs, and he utilized a strategy that would be copied, of course, by the Washington Nationals this year, in 2019 World Series, where he would use multiple sign sequences even without runners on base. And before the game, Alex Wood and Austin Barnes, who was his catcher at the time, set up an elaborate system so they could switch signs every, you know, 10 or so pitches. He wasn't taking any chances, you know. There were 9 playoff games in Minute Maid Park in 2017, right? Astros lost only one of those games. So, you know, people are wondering, okay, well, we know they were cheating during the 2017 regular season. Were they cheating during the postseason? Well, out of the 9 games, they lost only one. And what game did they lose out of all those 9? Yeah, game 4 against Wood. Sorry, game 4, not game 3. The only game they lost was that game because he was using advanced sign changes. He limited Houston to one run on one hit in that game, if you remember. I'm sure you probably put that out of your mind, but a solo home run by George Springer. You know, he went almost 6 innings. And that game evened the series. Now, the 8 pitchers who started those 9 games for the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Dodgers in 2017 have combined all those guys for 31 All-Star appearances. Clayton Kershaw obviously has won 3 Cy Young Awards. Chris Sale, yet Luis Severino. Yu Darvish, CeCe Sabathia, who is probably going to be a Hall of Famer. All of those guys were beaten by the Astros.
Yeah.
Put together, minus the start by Wood, the group combined for an 8.04 ERA at Minute Maid Park. Only Tanaka completed the 6th inning. I mean, it's just insane. Sale struck out more than 3 batters. He's the only one. It's just nuts, dude. In 5 of the outings, the starter walked more batters than he struck out. And Wood had the system, just like, you know, Strasburg and Scherzer and all the Nationals did going into Minute Maid Park this year. And he's the only one that got out of there unscathed, or relatively unscathed. I mean, yeah. Were they cheating in the postseason? Yeah, hell yeah, they were.
Yeah.
Come on.
They were. I mean, because it worked so well during the regular season. I ran across a story that stated that there were 9 major league pitchers during the regular season who were cut from their teams after having a rough outing in Houston in 2017.
Yeah.
And you know, it wasn't even probably their fault that they were getting hit so hard there, because they knew what was coming. Hitting is significantly easier if you don't have to figure out what pitch is coming. If you know what pitch is coming, just have to hit it rather than to decipher the pitch and then hit it.
As we said last time, it's like, you know, pitchers would much rather go up against a guy that they knew was juiced up. A guy they knew had been on steroids, right? You would much rather go up against that guy than a skinny guy who knows what pitch is coming 100% of the time. That's so much of a bigger advantage. Yeah, I know. There were those 9 guys in just 2017 alone, and I'm looking at, like, Mike Bolsinger for Toronto. He pitched 0.1 innings and gave up 4 runs. He was DFA'd the next day, and he hasn't pitched in the majors since.
Yeah, insane. And then the pitcher who brought this all to light, Mike Fiers, in that year, that he, I guess it was this past year, with the A's, there's 3 starts in Houston. He gave up like 80% of all the runs and hits that he gave up all season in just those 3 games in Houston.
That probably had a lot to do with him just being like, all right, enough's enough. Yeah. This is getting ridiculous. And I'm glad he did. I mean, it's going to be tough for MLB. But hey,
for people to stand up and take notice and not to try this, I think heads have got to roll. I'd like to see some player suspensions, but
players won't be untouched.
Is probably unlikely just because of the strength of the union. But
I think we talked about this before, but for the Houston's team, I mean, the majority of those players have never played anywhere else.
Right.
They came up in that system. And so if all your coaches are telling you this is how we do it, you know, who are you to say no? Now, I don't want to be an apologist for any of those players, because they were forever had the stink of cheater on them the rest of their career, and that might be punishment enough. But the managers in the front office need to be dealt with.
Alex Cora
banned.
And Carlos Beltran
banned. Well, Beltran, because he was a player.
He was a player at the time, but now he's not.
Also have something like these guys cannot manage a team for 10 years or something like that, and then that would exclude Beltran. You don't have to ban the guy, but you can essentially ban him because you know.
He can't be a manager. He can't be the head coach.
The managers and the coaches need to be the ones to stop it.
Yeah, because they're the
leaders. If they say it's okay, it's okay. If they make a culture where that is fine, then that's fine.
And if they plead ignorance or they didn't know what was going on, they shouldn't be coaching.
Yeah, exactly. They have no business.
Yeah. And the front office guys who okayed the whole thing to begin with. I mean, from the stories that I've read about it, it was Beltran and Cora.
Well, it was a uniformed player and a manager. Now nobody knows for sure. Now that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried about they just single out those two guys or maybe three guys and they just throw them under the bus and everybody else gets off, you know, scot-free. I hope that's not the case. I hope all the management gets dealt with harshly.
The investigation is ongoing and we'll probably have to wait until much closer to spring training.
But they're going to have to do it before pitchers and catchers report. So hopefully by February, hopefully by Valentine's Day, let's say.
By the end of January.
Yeah, that'd be cool. In time for beer week in the second week of February. That'd be nice. Speaking of which, we're drinking a really nice...
Yeah,
this Skiesta, this Bavarian style lager from Sierra. Well done, Sierra.
Yeah. And if you want to sponsor us, we'll definitely take it. Thank you.
BaseballShowPodcast@gmail.com. Yeah, give us a little help. You know, we're doing this out of the. Yeah, we're not making money.
We're not.
We give all of our money to charity.
We both have day jobs.
Well, you know, yeah, that is true. Now, I wanted to, since the decade is coming to a close. And a new one is imminent. I was thinking about we look back at what was your most favorite moment of the year? Favorite moment. Let's go favorite moment of the decade. Sorry. We'll go favorite moment of the decade, and then we'll also go like weirdest, what you think was the weirdest moment of the decade. Okay. But let's start with your favorite moment of the decade. Now, I have an idea.
I'm sure you probably
somewhere
have
in October, thing, somewhere yeah. in 2010.
In fact, the actual date was November 1st, 2010, very early on in
November
the decade.
Baseball.
It was Game 5 of the 2010 World Series, mm-hmm. and the Giants won that game and won the first World Series in San Francisco history.
Right.
And the franchise's first home run in like 56 years.
Well, over 56 years because they'd already been in San Francisco for
54 was the last time that the franchise had won the World Series. And they were still in New York.
Okay. So they had won
2010,
right before they moved.
Years. Yeah. Well, in 54 they won.
Oh, they did. Huh.
Yeah. You're thinking the Brooklyn Dodgers won right before the next year. But, so that was easily my favorite moment of the decade.
No, there's
a few others. The Buster Posey Grand Slam in Cincinnati that totally quieted that stadium in Game 5 of that short series. The NLDS, and I guess that was 2012.
Ishikawa's walk-off home run.
Ishikawa's walk-off home run, that was probably...
That was a strange moment, maybe.
Well, I don't know how strange that was.
Well,
but
Travis who? I mean, where's that guy
but,
been?
But I was at that game.
Really?
I was there for that home run. It was a spectacular moment. So there's been a lot. I mean, I was thinking about it. I'm glad that you gave me like a heads up to like really digest this question because 10 years of baseball is a lot of baseball to go through. But
can't remember 10 days ago, let alone 10 years ago. I know.
Those few moments really stand out as definitely as my favorite moment, baseball moment of the decade. What about you? What was your favorite?
Well, you know, of course, first thing is Dodgers winning the pennant in 2017, of course, because that's, you know, we hadn't done that in almost 30 years, and that was our year. And so that day of just clinching and winning the pennant was huge, you know, because, you know, I mean, we've said this before, but, you know, the World Series is sort of the icing on the National League pennant's cake. Because the American League don't play by the same rules. So, really, the National League pennant is sort of the big deal. And it always historically has been. But, of course, that year did not end so well. That was a joy. But I think the most joy, the most pure, unadulterated joy I felt was let me turn back the clock. Let me set the stage here for you. Game 4, 2013 NLDS against the Braves. Mm. Now, Braves had home field advantage in that series, but the Dodgers took the first game, 6-1 in Atlanta. Then the Braves took game 2, 4-3, a very, very close game. Then the Dodgers routed the Braves in game three, 13-6, I believe. Then game 4, man, the game was tight. I think Carl Crawford had 2 solo home runs. That was it. That's all we had. Carl Crawford, man, it's just funny. Just looking back, it doesn't even seem like that long ago. Like, this game is so just like ingrained in my memory. But game was tight. Momentum was going back and forth. Then in the 8th inning, Dodgers losing 2-3. One man on, no outs. Big Juan Uribe steps up to the plate, and he hits this like Carlton Fisk-ish ball to the left, high moonshot to left field. He takes a knee on the swing, you know. He almost falls over on this swing, and that
spins,
man,
out of his
shoes. All just willing it. Just stay fair, stay fair, stay fair. Of course it does. I literally fell out of the chair. I was watching it with my friend Keon. I'm on the ground screaming. That's all I remember, is just screaming. He's like, I think the couch tipped over. We went nuts, man. That was, because then we knew, like, okay, that was it. And that was the series, because there was no game 5. And, of course, the Braves didn't score in the 9th inning because we were at Dodger Stadium. And, man, that in terms of pure euphoria, I don't know why. I think because it was just sort of unexpected. And, again, Uribe, like, drops to the ground on that swing, almost like a Vlad Guerrero Sr. kind of thing. And that was, like, my Carlton Fisk moment right there. Just will it. Just stay fair. Stay fair. I don't know why, man, but that, for some reason, I think that's the most joy. Because, again, 17 is tainted.
Right.
Of course, then winning the pennant, and that was delightful. But yeah, no, man. Game 4, 2013 NLDS. Of course, we ended up losing Michael Wacha in St. Louis. Mm. God, man, I hate St. Louis. God, 2013 is brutal. But for some reason, it's not. I don't know. That's for me. That was pure joy right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, man. Look back on that. Mark Ellis, Carl Crawford, Hanley, Agon. Man, Puig, of course.
Yeah, it was quite a team. There's no doubt about that.
Man, jeez, man. That was back when Ethier was still going strong and Kenley Jansen was a young pup. Oh, well. Well, you know, anyway. Yeah, but that was it. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's so many other moments, but that was the one time I remember literally being on the floor, like howling, like losing my mind. Yeah. I was a younger man then. I had more energy, perhaps. But
weren't we all?
Now, what about anomaly of the decade?
Anomaly of the decade. Well, you know, thinking about this again, so much baseball to reflect upon. And one of the greatest things about this game is that you can watch any particular game and see something that you've never seen before.
That's right.
So, but I think, again, I go back to the first half of the decade, and there was one particular at bat in the postseason by Hunter Pence, where he hit a ball. I believe it was in the World Series. And he hit a ball, and it broke his bat. And while the bat was breaking, it made contact with the ball 2 more times. So 3 times the ball hit the bat. And
I think I remember this. It splintered out in a
weird way, and the ball spun out. And instead of going right to the shortstop, it made this weird curve and went out into the outfield for a base hit. And they said, what the heck happened there? And they looked, and the slow-mo replay clearly showed the bat breaking and the ball hitting the bat on the swing like 3 times. And it was probably the weirdest thing
That's pretty weird.
Of the decade, how often does that happen?
That is pretty strange. that in golf that'd be three strokes. So, but you're lucky in baseball. There are no rules against that.
Well,
that,
I mean, there is, but because the bat was breaking,
right?
That you know, that negated the rule of hitting the ball twice.
That's pretty good. And he did. It dropped in for a hit.
And so, it did.
Did he get a ribby on that? I don't remember.
I believe that it did.
Wow.
And it certainly kept the inning going, and they scored more runs and went ahead in that game, as if I recall correctly. Yeah.
What year was that? Was that 14, 12?
I think that might have been 14. I don't specifically remember. I just remember. I remember the at bat. I remember the slow mo replay.
Yeah.
More than I do the actual date of that particular game.
That actually, I wasn't gonna say. Now it reminds me of probably the weirdest thing I've ever seen too. Although I have a different one, but it was Puig. I think it was his first season or maybe a second. And back in the glory days of Vin Scully. It was a home game, and Puig, you know, he's built like Bo Jackson 2.0. I mean, this guy is insane. He did something I have never seen before, and I have never seen since, and probably will never see again. He had a broken bat on a check swing, made no contact.
Wrap your mind around that one. I do think I remember that.
No contact, check swing. He's so strong that he held up, the bat continued to go forward. His hand stayed still. The bat broke without being touched. That doesn't even make sense. And the only reason why I know what happens is because Vin Scully was like, he was shocked. And he even said, did that just happen? And like they did like the Exmo slow-mo replay. Sure enough, ball goes right by the bat. Bat breaks in half without even being touched. That's just pure.
That's some serious
pure
strength.
Just I mean, I don't even know what kind of strength that is. That's like superhuman strength. But the weirdest thing that I was thinking about, though, before you brought up the broken bat thing, because I completely forgot about that Puig one, and somebody go back and find that video, please. I have no idea what year that was. I want to say it was 14 or maybe 15. Philip Humber, does that name ring a bell to you? It should. The guy is in elite company. Philip Humber, 2012, White Sox pitcher. Philip Humber was the number 3 pick of the draft by the Mets in 2003. He did not live up to his promise and only started 30 games. When he took the mound, April 21st, 2012, he had never even thrown a complete game. But what did he do that day? Oh, he only threw a 96-pitch perfect game. And he never had a pitch go over 92 miles an hour. He would only make 20 more starts the rest of his career. And he was out of baseball after 2013. That year, he went 0-8 with a 7.9 ERA. I mean, this guy is forever in the baseball annals of, you know, elite pitching, even though it was only for one day, right? Kind of like, well, not so much like Kerry Wood, but Kerry Wood still had a decent career, but Kerry Wood had like one of the most dominant games in Major League Baseball history, and it wasn't even a perfect game, just the 20 strikeout game, of course. But Philip Humber, perfect in 2012. I mean, it's just kind of insane considering it kind of came out of nowhere. And I think that's pretty much, and that sort of ties into our trivia question from last week, but I thought that was pretty insane. Throw that out there. Yeah, no.
Yeah, no. Not impressed. It was quite. I was.
Your ideas are intriguing to me, and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
I was searching for that Puig video.
Good luck.
I mean, I found it.
Oh, you
right
did?
Away. Yeah, interesting. I have it.
Put it up on the Facebook page or whatever we have. Philip Humber, 2012. There's only been two perfect games. Actually, there were two more perfect games in that year. It's the first time. Three perfect games had ever been thrown in the same season, 2012. And the first time that two perfect games are pitched in the same stadium in the same year. Name that stadium.
Hmm.
So one of them was Philip Humber.
Right.
But he was a White Sox. And then the next one was Matt Cain, but that was not in Seattle. And then the one after that was the last one in history.
Right. That was in Seattle. That was...
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that...
Seattle. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that Felix Fernandez's perfect game?
Yeah. Yeah, you got it. Because 2010, when Dallas Braden and Roy Halladay threw one, that was the first time two perfect games had ever been thrown in the same year.
Right.
Which is super strange. And then 2 years later, three in the same year? Just
maybe
unreal.
Maybe that's why they decided to juice the balls to cut down on the perfect games. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think we're due for a perfect game. I think it'll be in Kershaw's. Kershaw basically had a perfect game, except for Hanley duffed the easy ground ball. But, I mean, even without that being a perfect game, it's still...
moment.
The metrics are still one of the most dominant games of all time. Just like Kerry Wood's 20 strikeout game wasn't a no-hitter,
right,
but it was argued to be like top three most dominant pitching performances of all time because he was just insane in that game. I've gone back and watched that game like two or three times since, like in its entirety. It's such a fun game to watch because the stadium is basically empty because it's a Wednesday afternoon. And by the end of it, the stadium's almost full because everybody's like leaving work. Everybody's going to Wrigley to go watch this game. People are, you know, like, I think like they're like letting people in for free after like the seventh inning just because it was just like, yeah, come watch history. Like, this is pretty insane. And he had a chance to get 21, remember? But yeah, it didn't work out. He would have been on the all-time list. But yeah, that was pretty cool. Now, that brings us to this week's Ig Nobel Award of the Week. I was a little rusty there.
No, well, I think we had a couple of candidates this time.
We have a runner-up. We have a runner-up in Caitlin Hill. But, that's not really... that's not... Rich Hill and Caitlin Hill getting arrested in Foxborough. I don't know. That's... Whatever. That was just a weird thing going on. I don't think that's quite that ignoble. Rachel more or less got arrested out of solidarity because his wife was getting like manhandled by cops for having
a drunk and disorderly. But.
No, it was a... he got a resisting arrest, which is a felony, and that's crazy. She got something about trespassing because she was asked to leave and she didn't want to leave or something. But supposedly her bag was too big, but they said she only had a fanny pack. I don't know. Who knows? That's not all right. That's all right. They're both out. The charges are dropped. Not a big deal. But you had a truly ignoble.
Yeah, I found a stat. It's, of course, it was related to the news that we kind of stepped over a little bit earlier. But that was, of course, Bumgarner being signed by Diamondbacks.
That's right. Staying in the West. Yeah.
5 years, $85 million. Out of that, I found this interesting stat that, during Bumgarner's tenure as the Giants, just a little bit over 9 years, he debuted as a Giant as a rookie in 2010.
10 years then, right?
Was his major league experience is listed at 9.1.
But he played all of 2010, didn't he?
He played most of 2010.
Okay.
He came up right around the same time that Buster Posey did.
He gets the Ig Nobel Award?
It's not Bumgarner's Ig Nobel Award. But it relates to him. Since 2010. The Giants have made 420 draft picks. Of them, only three players have hit more home runs in that for a major league team than Bumgarner with his 19 career home runs.
That can't be true. Only three other guys besides Bumgarner.
Three guys have hit more than Bumgarner that have been drafted by the Giants since 2010.
That is truly ignoble. So what you're saying is the Giants farm system and or their scouting research is garbage.
Their scouting for power since
that
2010.
That might be ignoble award of the decade right there.
It's possible. We're doing a decade
of the decade.
Ending.
Decade. Wow, that I almost like I'm incredulous. Like that doesn't make any sense. Okay, no,
I guess it really doesn't.
Joe Panic.
Joe Panic, yes.
Brandon Belt.
He was drafted before 2010.
Okay. Who else?
It would have been Matt Duffy.
Oh yeah, Duffy. Yeah, he had like 19 in one season. So you're saying he's only had like three since? He's playing with
22.
Tampa
he has 22
Bay.
Total. Yeah, he had a big injury that that was part of it. But Duffy, Panic, and Adam Duvall has 97.
Oh, Duvall came up with the Giants.
Yeah, he was drafted by
shouldn't
the Giants.
Shouldn't have let him go.
No, they shouldn't have. But
wow. Nobody that they've brought up has more than 24 home runs?
No one that they've drafted
in
has
10
more
years?
Than 20 home runs. Yeah. In 10 years. Well, 9 years, yeah. Since 2010, 420 picks, only three have hit more than 20 home runs.
If a Dodger fan told me that, I'd be like, come on, that's stupid. That doesn't make sense. But since you are a Giants fan, it must be true. I'm sure you don't want it to be true.
I don't want it to be true. Wow. But I mean, there's still...
Wow.
There's still time, but it's not looking good.
Yeah, that's not looking very good. That's pretty bad, man. That's pretty... Pretty ignoble. Well, there we go. That's a good one for the decade, I think. Now, speaking of the decade, but actually this year, I have three stats that I think were maybe the most dominant of this season. Now, I want you to tell me which one you think is the most dominant. Now, Mike Trout finished 2019 with a career WAR of 72.5. 10.1 more than soon to be unanimous, probably Hall of Famer Derek Jeter's career. Trout's 72.5 WAR are the most ever by a position player through his age 27 season, ahead of Ty Cobb's 69. Trout is already, of course, one of 11 three-time MVPs in baseball history, and he and Stan Musial are the only two players with three MVPs by the age 27 season. Now, so we got that. He's already better than Jeter ever was, which is pretty insane. But now we also have Pete Alonso. Now, Pete Alonso is the only player to get 50 home runs. He's, of course, was
in
a rookie.
Rookie season.
Yeah. MLB Home Run Crown and NL Rookie of the Year Award, smashing more than one record along the way. He set the MLB record for home runs and the Mets single season record. He also hit the Mets' hardest and longest homer since StatCast began tracking in 2015, it took him just 12 games to hit the Mets' hardest homer, 118.3 mile per hour shot, and then he ended up tied for the hardest homer in MLB for the season. Then he hit a 474-foot jack, which makes it the Mets' longest home run since StatCast began tracking. He also hit 42 home runs on August 27th, breaking Beltran and Hundley's single season franchise record with still like over a month to go in the season. And on September 28th, the second to last game of the season, he set a new major league rookie record by hitting number 53, breaking Aaron Judge's 2-year-old record of 52. All right, so you got that one. Now you have Gerrit Cole. The number is 373. That was his total strikeouts spanning regular and postseason. That's the fifth highest single-year total by any pitcher in modern history, trailing only Randy Johnson, who had 419 in 2001 and 375 in 99, and Sandy Koufax, who had 411 in 1965. Nolan Ryan in there for good measure with 383, just ahead of Cole's 373 in 1973. His 39.9% strikeout rate in the regular season marked the highest in MLB history. And in October, he and Strasburg tied for the second highest strikeout total with 47 in a single postseason. So which of those three do you think is the most dominant?
That's an interesting thought process.
I think those are the three most dominant things that have happened this season.
I would definitely agree. Those are the three most impressive feats. I would say that... just because of the controversy over the ball, that I would say that Pete Alonso would be out. It would be interesting to see what he would have been able to do all else being equal, but with the ball from 2-3 years ago.
Well, not 2 years ago, because 2017 that was actually the highest. But,
right. So
and that's the year that Judge broke the record.
2016. Yeah, that's true. 2015 ball.
Right.
So given that, I would say, probably Gerrit Cole.
Really?
Just because he was able just to dominate pitchers or batters in such a way, when, you know, with historic, you know, home run hitting.
That's true.
I would say that would probably be the single most. I mean, I would give it to Trout, just because, I mean, that's impressive. I mean, for the career dominance, definitely Trout. For the single year, I would give it to Cole because everyone was knocking the cover off the ball, but yet he managed to mow down 373, you know,
and the 39.9% strikeout rate is just insane.
That's, I mean, yeah, 39. Yeah.
Now, that being said, in that same frame of thinking,
two out of every five batters he faced, he struck out. That's pretty amazing.
I can play a little devil's advocate here because while, there's never been more home runs hit in history, and he's been facing some of the, you know, an era where teams have five guys that hit 20 home runs, or even more for the Dodgers, but you sort of use that same argument in saying that it should be Trout over Cole because Cole is also pitching in an era where dudes are just swinging at everything. So the strikeout rates have been higher than ever before. So does that muddle a little bit, not unlike Pete Alonso's record-setting home run streak in an era where everybody's hitting home runs? And then, you know, Trout, I think it's got to just go to Trout just because he's passing, he's passing Ty Cobb. And not just passing him, but like over 3 points more or 2.5 points more.
Yeah.
That's pretty insane. Oh, yeah. Over 3 points more. Sorry. 69-72.5. Because that's just consistency throughout this decade, or at least, you know, the 7 years or so he's been playing.
Yeah. I would say over the career, definitely Trout. For the single season, I think even if people are swinging at everything, I mean, it was only been we have a trivia question coming up that may relate to this whole thing.
But no hints there. Yeah,
I think that just a single season, single person dominant performance, whether or not people are swinging freely or not. There's only, you know, you're talking about a handful of guys who have done it more.
Randy Johnson doing it in getting more, getting 375 in 99 and then getting 419 in 2001, the height of the steroid era. So, you know, even if the balls weren't as juiced, they're still being juiced by the dudes.
Yeah, the dudes were juiced. I mean, that's, not ball,
I don't know if that'll ever get broken. And, I mean, that's way more than 373.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, you know, with Trout being compared to Ty Cobb back then, I mean, I don't know. Trout always finds a way to make it into this podcast.
And different way, though, too. I mean, Ty Cobb was known for, being a master on the base pass and creating runs after, you know, getting...
And that's factored into war. War isn't just power.
No, it is. But he was able to do it in a different way. So the straight side-by-side comparison, we're talking about two totally different players.
But that's why war is great comparing eras. Yeah,
I'm not saying that it isn't. I'm just saying that you know, they've done it in different ways. That Cobb didn't dominate the way that Trout dominates.
Right, but the level of domination is more or less equal.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't disagree.
But you said something about talking about Pete Alonso. You said something about Statcast and the Statcast era.
That's true. Yes,
and
so,
you said something is changing.
Well, yeah,
in
you
terms
know,
of that.
Back in April of this year, we talked briefly about how MLB is doing an overhaul of their ballpark's tracking systems with Hawkeye's optical technology. Hawkeye, yeah, like MASH. Known to tennis fans as... Is that his name? Hawkeye Pierce?
Yeah.
MASH? Yeah, so, okay. Yeah. No, I was second-guessing myself. Which, if you're a tennis fan, you already know that the Hawkeye technology is a optical technology. It is not a radar technology. And it's going to be used as the basis. I mean, it's used for the automatic serve in tennis. But it was installed in baseball stadiums across the country this season. That's going to end in a full change in technology for the 2020 season. Now, multiple sources are sort of citing the improvement in accuracy as the main reason for the change. Eno Saris wrote last year that multiple analysts who work for MLB teams told The Atlantic that the change from radar to optical tech is a done deal. And a letter that went out to all 30 teams takes that tone as well. The letter, a copy of which was obtained by The Athletic, came from Chris Marinac, MLB's executive VP, Strategy, Technology, and Innovation. It outlined a three-phase plan for bringing in Hawkeye equipment over the course of 2019 with an eye for a 2020 rollout. Now, of course, with the new park in Texas, they don't have that. So hopefully they've learned enough from testing it out on throughout the major league system in 2019 that it'll be okay. Basically, the email says, quote, "As many of you know, Major League Baseball is in the process of building the next generation ball and player tracking system. We expect this next generation system to significantly improve the accuracy and precision of ball and player tracking and unlock new tracing opportunities like bat swing path tracking and player limb tracking. We are currently planning to roll out the initial elements of the system at the MLB level for opening day 2020 with enhanced features like swing path tracking released over time. Some complaints about the TrackMan technology have surfaced in the years since it was first introduced in 2015, in coinciding with StatCast. It turned out that pop-ups left the area scanned by the radar and had to be matched to optical data. For one, when it first debuted, TrackMan missed over half of all pop-ups and as much as one-fifth of all ground balls. And in tennis, the Hawkeye's range of error has been reported as being as small as 2.2 millimeters. So it's kind of interesting because they switched to TrackMan just about 5 years ago, and now they're switching sort of back to an optical thing. And
Improvements in technologies, think, would allow for this processing speeds, just improvements in optics and lenses to be able to... the ball moving at such high rates of speed and tested. How long the system has been in the tennis?
That's a good question. I don't know, at least for a while now.
So yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of testing and tweaking with that, and that's a ball that moves very quickly,
over 120 miles an hour in a lot of cases,
measuring against white lines painted on a surface. This should be very interesting. Now, will this be an improvement in tracking to implement a cyber umpire?
I knew you were going there. And unfortunately, I think that's also
this. If it's been proven to have an error of less than
2.2 millimeters,
less than, then that's
as small. I think it could go up to like 5 millimeters or so, but...
millimeters, still less than a centimeter when you're talking about an object that is approximately 3 inches in diameter.
True.
That's pretty good.
I know. It's kind of scary. Like, I'm hopeful for it because it should have some advanced metrics and it's going to be really good for fantasy. I mean, just the last 5 years alone, the new stats that have come out. I mean, even just something like BABIP. I mean, I know that's not new, but it really is a good indicator of predicting the future. And so, of course, it's not perfect. But now if we get certain things like arm slot angle even, because Trevor Bauer was complaining about TrackMan earlier this year. And because he's such an analytical nerd, he uses these things at his own house, and he was saying that it couldn't really read his spin rate properly, and he knew it was different, but the TrackMan wasn't keeping up, supposedly. So we'll see. This should be better at also calculating spin rate when it doesn't affect the flight of path, supposedly. I don't know. I mean, a lot of this stuff just, you know, goes over my head. But hopefully it'll make for a better fan experience.
We need to find a aerospace engineer in our audience. Maybe help us out with some of these technical aspects of the flight of the ball and spin rate and all of that.
Drag coefficient and all that stuff. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going a little long this time because, you know, we've been gone for a little while. But
lots to talk about and, wrap up the decade, the year, everything.
I'm just going to go straight into the trivia unless you have something else for me here.
I don't have much else except for just a random silly fact. A couple of our famous characters over the last couple seasons.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Davis, both with and with a C.
Yeah.
Turns out they have identical career on base percentage.
Really?
319. I thought that was just
319.
A funny, funny little quirk of coincidence.
You change your name, but you can't change your OBP. Interesting. The Chris Davises. Well, I think we'll see Crush Davis, Chris with a K, back. I don't know if we're gonna see Chris Davis with a C come back. I'm sure we will.
We'll see. Maybe change of venue will do him good. But
that's probably true. Yeah.
Who knows? Right. Yeah. So that was the only other thing that I have. I think we pretty well covered everything else that we had.
Beautiful. I like that. That brings us to last week's trivia question.
Yeah, last week's trivia question. Only two pitchers, in history have hit a grand slam and pitched a perfect game. Who are those two pitchers?
Interesting. Now that's I mean, it can only be one of 23 dudes or so, right?
Right.
Or two of. So it looks like pretty much everybody just guessed one. I don't see anybody guessing both, but let's see what we got. We got Mike Simeon in San Diego says Jim Bunning.
Jim Bunning. Interesting choice, but no.
No, okay. You know, Jim Bunning did have 7 career home runs and 2 in 1967, but you're saying neither of those were a grand slam.
Neither of those had the bases loaded at the time.
Jim Bunning, though, does have the title of throwing the first perfect game in the National League in the 20th century, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Can't believe it took 67 years. The National League, all the other perfect games were American Leaguers. That's pretty crazy.
It is maybe because it's without the designated hitter, you know, you have to, pitching changes might happen a little bit more often.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't really a thing back then. American League was just so much more dominant for the first half of the century.
Well, there's no such thing as a designated hitter for a long time anyway, so I don't know.
Right.
But
yeah, but sorry, Mike, no, not Jim
wrong
Bunning.
Wrong answer.
Got Larry P. in Sparks, Nevada says Catfish Hunter.
Catfish Hunter. Another interesting guess, but no.
Now I'm looking up Catfish's stats. Looks like he had 6 home runs in his short career. And even drove in 3 runs on 3 hits on the same day he got his perfect game, 1968. That's pretty cool.
That is a
three
good day
hits
at
and
the
a
office.
Perfect game.
That is a good day at the office, no doubt. But
wow.
With 3 RBIs is not a grand slam make.
Wow. Alrighty. Okay, sorry. No, not Catfish. That was a pretty good guess. I was thinking that was probably one of them. Now, I think I know one of them, but I don't know what the other one is. But all right, let's see. Leanne Treadwell in San Francisco says Sandy Koufax. Hey.
Sandy Koufax. Another really good guess, but no, that is an incorrect answer.
Yeah, now that I'm looking at his stats, looks like Koufax only had 2 home runs in his career. 1 in 62 and 1 in 63. Of course, 63 was the year he was Cy Young and MVP, putting up a ridiculous 1.88 ERA with 11 shutouts that season.
Wow.
And 306 strikeouts.
Wow.
The crazy thing is that wasn't even his best season. I think at like 65 or 66, the year he retires, even better. 67? I don't know. He also went 25-5 that year, for those who care about that kind of thing. But so he did have a home run in the year he was perfect, but it was not a grand slam. Sorry, Koufax. Sorry, Sandy. All right, we got Erasmus Villaverde in Diamond Bar says Don Larson.
Don Larson. Don Larson is a correct answer. Ooh, that is one of them.
Ding,
Donnie
ding,
Larson.
Ding. Now,
had
that's
a
the guy
grand
I was
slam.
Thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Of course, he was famously perfect in Game 5 of the 1956 World Series.
Right.
And he had 14 home runs in his career. 72 RBIs in his career. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Hitting .242. Wow, that's probably better than, well, it's not better than Bumgarner. I guess Bumgarner, as you just said, has 19 home runs, I
yeah,
believe.
Yeah, 19 home runs.
Might have a better hit, batting average, though. How many
possible.
Ribbies does Bumgarner have? 72 is a lot for a pitcher.
No, right offhand, I'd have to look that up.
Anyway, so he did. He had it in 1956. You're saying he had a grand slam that year?
I don't know if it was that year, but
he had. Well, it must have been, because that's the year he had the perfect game. Isn't that the question?
Well, it wasn't. It was in their career.
Oh.
In their career. It doesn't have to happen on the same
it.
Season.
I'm not paying attention.
But yeah, they've hit. I mean, it may have happened in the same season. It may not have. I don't have that information, but it's just both a grand slam and a perfect game in the career.
All right. Well, that's it. That's all the guesses. And so Erasmus, there you go, buddy. You got an open invitation to have a beer and talk some baseball with us. I'll send you your T-shirt. I already contacted you because I thought I knew that one for sure. Now, I don't know the other guy. So
but we actually his name was invoked earlier this year.
Okay, so it's not
his perfect game in
not,
Seattle.
Not El Presidente, not David Cohen or David Wells.
No.
Oh, Randy. No, Randy was American
no,
League
no,
as well.
No, no.
Well, I guess he did play with
the
Diamondbacks.
Diamondbacks. Yeah, no, but
I don't think it's Randy. No,
he
not
wasn't
Randy.
Known for his power bat. Just
not
going to
be
arm.
Mark Burley. Philip Humber? No way. No, it can't be Philip Humber. White's. Oh, I'm an idiot. Got it. King Felix.
King Felix.
Interesting.
Felix Hernandez hit a grand slam and had a perfect game in his career.
And he is the last guy to have a perfect game.
Yeah.
August 15th, 2012. Wow. King Felix, man, God, he was so good. Jesus,
yeah.
God, he was so good.
It was.
It's kind of a shame. He kind of fizzled out, you know,
it
a little
is.
Bit there. Unlike Philip Humbert, you know, who went out with a bang. It's better to burn out than to fade away. Right?
Yes, this is. Neil Young had a point.
Yeah, you got that right. All right, there you go. King Felix. Wow, that's pretty cool. That was a good one. That was a good one. That was pretty hard, but I guess you had a 1 in 24 chance or so to get that.
Right.
All right, that brings us to this week's trivia question.
Yeah.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Here we go. This is a nice, quick, and easy one. Who was the first batter to strike out 200 times in a season?
Wow.
That's it. That's a pretty good one.
That's a great question.
Who was it?
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a hint.
No hints. No hints. Maybe next week
well,
we can give a hint.
What's the name of this show?
Well, okay.
Yeah.
West Coast Bias
yeah.
Baseball
yeah,
Podcast.
That's all. That narrows it
we,
down
we,
a little.
We try. So somewhere
it's not Chris Davis with the C.
No.
That's another hint. I shouldn't have given you that one. Thing, but, well. You know, what are you going to do? Who was the first batter to strike out 200 times in a season? Now it's seemingly common. It's still not really common, but it's
it happens
more
common.
More
often but
right.
than, it,
yeah.
Than it used to.
And it's probably going to be happening more and more yeah. often, which is kind of a shame. But anyway.
We'll see.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Email your answers. Great. Leave the answer in the comment section, iTunes, Podomatic website. You know where to do it.
Find us on Facebook as well.
Yes, sir. We will be back next year. Hopefully not too long of a break. We appreciate you bearing with us throughout this. But yeah, all the holiday travel, all that's done. So we'll be having more regular episodes since. And if you have a good trivia question, email us that too as well, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're always looking. Sometimes it gets a little tough to find something decent. But anyway, on that note.
All right. So.
Got anything else?
Thank you. Happy New Year.
I'm Happy New Year.
I think. And yeah.
Yeah,
I'm,
that's it.
I'm Samuel Paul.
From San Francisco, California, I am. Adam Nelson.
Yeah, and remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.
Yeah, 1.5 months.